have the proud privilege and opportunity to bring into the analysis of the second Bush term one of the greats of the literary and political analysis empire. And we are speaking of none other than Gore Vidal. And we welcome him to discuss our inaugural augury.
Augury is a wonderful word, by the way. In Italy, if somebody's having a birthday or you wish them well, you say auguri, which is from the Latin, which means good auguries. May people's guesses about the future, good guesses, come true. So auguri for the United States, and watch out for this president. Now, what was your question?
What does this new Bush term bode?
I should think it bodes for the destruction of the United States of America. Certainly, the Republic, as we understood the Republic, based upon the Constitution of 1789 and the Bill of Rights, has been pretty much shredded over the last 5-6 years. Can't blame the Bushes entirely for this, because things have been going wrong for a long time. I would like to point out there is no war other than the one that the president unilaterally is waging against two weak countries against a weak political system, weak Congress, which does not protest. Only Congress may declare war. Congress hasn't. They've given him certain powers along the way. But this is not wartime. He says, I'm wartime president. That means I can take your money, and I can lock you up, and I can do anything I want, and I'll send you to Guantanamo if I feel like it, and I think you're a terrorist. Now, we have a fool like that in charge of us. The surprising thing about the last election is the way that it went. I would have thought, since at this moment, something like 56% of the American people think we should never have gone to war in Iraq, and those numbers were rising as the election drew near, I would have thought we'd be voting against this war. Because it is simply a Bush war. It has nothing to do with the American people. We were never in danger from weapons of mass destruction. We are not in danger, really, from anybody except an administration that has fallen in love with war because of the special powers that it gives the government to do whatever it pleases, getting rid of the Bill of Rights, due process of law, locking people up without telling them why they're being locked up. Not only foreigners, but Americans here. I mean, this is the most illegal series of events in the history of the United States. We've had hairy times in the past, but nothing to compare to this. So, what have we to look forward to? Well, like everybody else, I've been following the Iran caper, which I have been predicting for quite some time. Now, that was on the drawing boards, contingency plans, as they call them at the Pentagon, that we would go after Iran. They've got a lot of oil. They have a lot of enemies among neoconservatives who have pretty much taken over the Pentagon and the running of the war. The president doesn't seem to understand what is happening, or if he does, he is really culpable. And here we are going to start a war in the middle of one that isn't a war, but people are dying, so that technically, that is a bellicose situation and a tragic situation for those at risk. So instead of talking about how the hell we get out of the mess that we are in the Middle East, specifically Iraq and Afghanistan, we're now talking about going into Iran, which has been a dream for some time of the oil and natural gas hustlers who have seized power in the United States of America, now govern us through a brain-dead Congress, all of their party, paid for by corporate America, and a Supreme Court, which is not interested in justice and will not check in on this issue. We have no weapons left, legally. So the Constitution is gone. Where would you turn? And I ask anybody listening to this, you are really in trouble. Whom would you turn to? Well, your congressman isn't going to help you. He's helping out General Motors or whoever paid for his election. You can't turn to the executive branch because they run concentration camps. They don't like dissent. And the courts, well, they're pretty expensive, the lower courts, And the highest court is not on our side, just to put it as tactfully as I can. So here we are, headed for absolute disaster. And it is very apparent. Most thoughtful people I come across are pretty much aware of it. One thing, you know, the United States was always terribly good at business sometimes. It was all materialistic and too much so, as opposed to spiritual other countries, not one of which I have ever visited, but I assume there must be some. But we are materialistic, and business is our business. Well, look at the debts that we have run up. We can't pay the cost of this war day by day without borrowing money, and nobody wants to buy our treasury bonds. Or will we have the money in the future to service those bonds by paying the interest on the debt? Now I see there's a whole raft of pieces coming out in the press saying it is quite clear that the future, and I've been writing this for many years, that the future now belongs to India, China, and Japan. They have the money. We've outsourced everything, including, it seems to me, the telephone company, to these countries to help us out, or to sometimes to buy our treasuries, buy our goods. But we don't seem to make much of anything anymore. So we are outsourced, we are non-productive, we are deeply in debt, and now we're going to go to war against Iran, a brilliant culture, by the way, that we know nothing about because education is considered, you know, just not the thing. So we don't know about other countries. But Persia was one of the greatest civilizations that ever came forth on the planet. And they are smart, and they have atomic weapons. Now we're pretending, as we pretended with Iraq, that they're longing to blow us up because we're so prosperous and we have liberty and freedom and democracy. None of these things that we do have, but nevertheless, that's the official line for the administration. They've never explained why it was, if Saddam Hussein had had these weapons, which he did not have, why he would want to blow us up. Now, we know why Osama bin Laden hit us, because he wrote a lot of editorials to that effect, sent us lots of unpleasant messages why he hated us. It was on religious grounds. He was a religious zealot. He was doing a religious job. We're doing a job for the oil and gas business. That is the people who are making money out of this, and God knows how it is going to end, but we, the American people, are going to be the losers.
One of the key elements of U.S. policy is torture. You have the memorandum written by Alberto Gonzalez and assisted by the counsel for Vice President Richard Cheney. Does that indicate a new relationship of the United States with the world in terms of winning friends and influencing people?
Well, it's pure barbarism. I mean, it's symbolically, it's interesting that regions of the United States are rejecting Darwin and evolution. Well, I can see why. We have a substantial minority in the United States which hasn't advanced much beyond the baboon. And these ignorant people are full of hatred of other people, particularly those brighter than they are. And would like to take vengeance on them. So it's nice that we're rejecting evolution, and we are meanwhile going back to the Stone Age with torture, the killing of innocent populations, attacking countries which have done us no harm. This is insupportable. I was watching on C-SPAN the other night. They showed inaugural addresses from Franklin Roosevelt to the president. And Roosevelt, needless to say, he's the American genius, and he spoke of everything from Social Security, or intimated it. But it starts with Truman. Truman is starting to talk about a terrible enemy. He followed Roosevelt, as we remember. And Truman is already starting the Cold War, because the United States are rulers at that time. Roosevelt has just died and had made some agreements with Stalin and Russia, which might have kept the world quite peaceful, and we could have avoided the Cold War. Well, Truman got rid of those because he had been convinced by certain people who had made a lot of money out of the war that we should be forever armed, perpetually at war, for a perpetual peace. So there we are, on top of the world, economically, militarily. We have the atomic bomb, nobody else has it. And here is Harry Truman. Got to watch out. There's this godless, atheistic nation out there that wants world conquest. Well, the Russians, you know, didn't want much of anything then except to recover the 20 million people that they had killed in World War II. They weren't going anywhere, but we saw to it that they would arm. We saw to it they'd be frightened. We saw to it that they became enemies. So we've been creating enemies ever since. And now we're taking on 1 billion Muslims. Isn't that brilliant? Really brilliant. Yeah, 1 billion people who will hate us. And it'll take several generations for them to get over that.
Well, there is a social transformation that is promised by the Bush administration. Poof. Democracy. Democracy as a tool of the United States foreign policy and statecraft is the proclaimed basis of these spreading wars. What is your assessment of that claim, and do you believe that it's possible for the Bush administration to export democracy to the United States?
Well, since the United States has never been a democracy, and since the founding fathers did not want a democracy, I say this to the wonder sometimes of many audiences, but the word democracy does not appear in our Constitution. We are a republic, and a rather conservative republic interested in, at the beginning, in white men of property having a safe place to do business in. Later, the franchise is spread, but we are not a democracy. These elections, why is it that most of our people don't want to vote? They know that they don't have anything to vote for. In the end, Kerry sounded just like Bush. They were both in favor of the war. Now, the one thing that the senator, the governor of Vermont, proved was that there was a huge anti-war party. The Americans have always, we as a people, believed in minding our own business, not in attacking other countries. We had enough to do at home and so on. This has all been imported. And it all comes out of corporate America, out of a ghastly educational system. And we now have a government which is not only not representative of American people, even as republics go, but nowhere near a democracy. But democracy is a nice word. It's like ketchup. You can put it on everything. We are bringing democracy to Iraq, and we'll bring it to Iran. And one day it may actually come to the United States, but I don't think any of us will live that long.
Your knowledge, your education, and social exposure has given you a familiarity with American history that is rarely paralleled. And I'm wondering if you can look back over your knowledge of prior presidents and administrations and put George W. Bush in context and compare him to where we are today and where other presidential leaders have been.
I don't see that you can compare him. He doesn't come out of any political system that we've ever tried before. He wasn't elected the first time around in the year 2000. That was a faked election. He was brought in by corrupt practices. He may have been the second time, or he may not have, but whatever it was, the presidential election was not fought on any issues. The war, the morality of the war, and the wisdom of the war, and the wisdom of our techniques used against foreigners, like torture and concentration camps. None of this was part of the public debate. We were talking about abortion, homosexual marriage. Aren't these great topics? These are really great topics for a great people on the march with atomic weapons to be discussing. There was so much really to talk about, and neither Kerry nor Bush was about to do it, and they both approved of the war because their advisors, certainly Kerry's advisors, had told him that. Result is, we are going on. I had a title of a little book called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. I didn't know how prophetic that title was. This is perpetual war. And after Iran, we'll make Russia angry at us, or somebody else out there. God help us if we make China angry at us. There are much more of them than there are of us. This war will end in our defeat, and that is why I want us to get out of it. I want us to bring the troops home, and I want us to try and invent an educational system so that really maniacs don't get in charge of the levers of power.
Bringing this back home to domestic policy, Gorgadal, we have an election in which the president ran on the fears of conservative pockets of voters, on a platform of homophobia, even though he does claim to have a mandate. To round out our assessment, can you look at what you think the administration means in terms of domestic policy?
It's the last gold rush. 1849, I think. I'm out here in California as I speak to you. that California filled up with people because they discovered gold, and the gold rush was on. Well, the gold rush is now on. Now, the last pile of gold in the United States is the money that we have given, since the age of 16, which is quite a long time ago. It's when I first worked and paid Social Security. The gold rush is for the bankers and the brokers and the people with mutual funds can get their hands on Social Security money. So you begin with a series of lies, the way they began the Iraq war. Saddam Hussein has nuclear weapons. He's going to use them immediately. We've got to act fast. Stop him. So people fell for that. Now we hear 2018, Social Security, there won't be any money left. We've got to start to fix it now. We'll privatize it. What does that mean? We'll hand all the money in Social Security over to Wall Street. They'll invest it for you in every manner came. You will end up a rich capitalist, which is the dream of every good American. Well, you're going to end up a very poor capitalist because they're going to take that money. They will lose it as they always do. I've never known any boom, certainly a bubble as big as this one would be, that doesn't break. It's totally impractical. It cannot work. All we have to do is look across the water at Great Britain. Thanks to Mrs. Thatcher, they tried something like that too, privatizing a certain amount of retirement money for people of modest means as they got older. They found out they've lost all the money. Well, the money just didn't hold up. It couldn't bear up with the changes in the marketplace. That's very well known. Not that our media would tell us, because our media is totally corrupt. It's owned by the same people who are in the gold rush. So they're going to keep telling us, oh, Social Security's finished. It's just absolutely finished. We've got to go privatize it. And they'll talk about the great success in England, where it's a disaster. And the British are talking about our Social Security system as it now works as being the ideal. Simultaneously, our president, acting for his wealthy friends on Wall Street, is telling us that it's about to fail. Well, it's doing quite well, and the only danger to it is not going to be underpopulation of workers. It is going to be people like Bush and Cheney. They are gold rush people, and this is the gold mine.
Some people, given the cognitive dysfunction of the government and of the current administration, are driven to scream. You are driven to write, and I'm wondering what message in a bottle you might leave for future sanity squads who rummage through the rubble of our contemporary times.
Do as our ancestors said, not as we did.
Extraordinary. Gore Vidal, this is Pacifica Radio's coverage of the inauguration of George W. Bush. My name is Robert Knight with Janet Coleman here in New York City, broadcasting from the studios of WBAI. And Gore Vidal is the author of Imperial America, among many other books and works. And we thank him for joining us today. Also joining us is our occasional broadcast partner.